Hey guys, it's Emily and welcome back to another episode of my forensics podcast called Case Studies with Emily. I hope you brought your curiosity caps because today's case is one heck of a case. So let's dive in and talk about the Zodiac Killer. Alright y'all, let's get into this amazing case. Well, not amazing, but it's very interesting. It all happened on the night of December 20th, 1968 in Benicia, California, when a murderer discovered two bodies at Lover's Lane along Lake Herman Road. The bodies belonged to Betty Lou Jensen and David Faraday. After 11 o'clock, which, by the way, was the two kids' curfew, Betty Lou had died due to 5 gunshots to her back, and David Faraday was dying from a gunshot to his head. Police found shell casings at the scene, and witnesses reported seeing a vehicle right next to Faraday's Rambler at the time of the shooting. In a search for answers, police originally thought the crime was drug-related, given that Faraday was allegedly involved with a local pot dealer. My bad. Faraday had recently threatened to call the police on the dealer, and police believe that this crime could have been something to make sure that never happened. However, investigators concluded that altercation was not connected to the murders. Another boy was considered a suspect due to his relationship with Betty Lou, which isn't completely certain depending on your research, but he had an alibi and it was concluded that he was not the shooter nor was he involved. The search seemed to be going nowhere until the summer of 1969. On July 4th, a gunman attacked a second young couple just northwest of the previous crime scene. Darlene Farron died from multiple gunshot wounds, but her friend Michael McGoo survived from wounds in his leg, jaw, and neck. Michael explained to the police that Darlene picked him up with intentions of going to Mr. Ed's diner, but they decided to go to the park instead. They were talking when a suspicious vehicle came up behind them. The car went off for a bit, but later returned once again behind Darlene's car. The driver stepped out with a bright light, making the victims think it was the police, but when he came to their window, he pulled out a gun and shot Darlene and Michael. Blocks away, the unsub used the payphone to report the crime committed and also was confessing to the murder that he had just committed and the one that he committed in 1968, the previous year. He said, and I quote, "I want to report a murder. If you will go 1 mile east on Columbus Parkway, you will find kids in a brown car. They were shot with a 9mm Luger. I also killed those kids last year. Goodbye." Based on the call and victim descriptions, police determined the criminal was at least 30 years of age or older, a white male, about 5'8 in height, heavy set, beefy build, which was about 195 to 200 pounds, and he had light, short brown curly hair. The Zodiac Killer struck again in September, where he brutally tied up victims Cecilia Shepherd and Brian Hartnell before stabbing them with rage. The unsub wrote a messy note and left it on the car windshield and also called police claiming responsibility afterwards. Both victims survived, but after being taken by emergency services, Cecilia died due to her critical condition. 2 weeks later, the killer struck once again, this time being off pattern, because as you can see from previous crimes, he had a pattern of shooting couples and public yet secluded areas where people weren't really paying much attention, and the gunshots were pretty the same. The males had less gunshots on them, but the girls were had so much gunshots. The only thing different with the previous one that we just talked about was the tying. So back to it, he struck again 2 weeks later. This time it was off pattern where he shot a taxi driver named Paul Stein, or Steve. It was deemed a robbery until police found a note from the Zodiac Killer. So basically, the only thing that tied this murder to the others was the note. So it was a very critical piece of evidence. 5 other murders have also been linked to the Zodiac Killer. The police were able to sketch a sketch based off of witness reports, specifically from Paul Steen. However, they were never able to make a match. Suspects also came and gone, leaving the case unsolved. Because of this being unsolved for, because of this case being unsolved for nearly 5 decades or more, law enforcement has become extremely frustrated. As would I if I were in their shoes. Alright, let's talk about who was all involved. So the key players in this crime were definitely the victims. So we have like the true case victims where he claimed responsibility for, which was David Faraday and Betty Lou Jensen, Michael Magoo, Darlene Farren, Brian Hartnell, Cecilia Shepherd, and Paul Steen. As I mentioned earlier, he's been able to be linked to different crimes, and victims from those include Robert Domingos, Linda Edwards, and Cherry Jo Bates. I did not mention this, but in certain research websites, they say that there have been suspects mostly connected to his appearance, or because they've wrote something on him and it just seemed like it was written so vividly that only one person could technically say, like, recall those memories and stuff. And some of those people include Arthur Lee Allen, Earl Vaughn or Van Bess Jr., and Louis Myers. So when and where was this crime committed? Technically, if you want to be super technical about this, it started in 1968, and it's still going on today because it's unsolved. But the crimes themselves were between 1968 and like 1970s, something around there. It's kind of a cloudy gray area. And this all happened in Northern California. Specific places would be Benicia, Vallejo, or Vallejo, Napa County, and San Francisco. Once again, disclaimer, sorry if all of this is really not pronunciated right. Alright, evidence. So, evidence would include the shell casings from the first crime scene sketch that was made based off of testimonies, and obviously the witness testimonies could be counted as evidence. The encrypted notes that he left at each scene, starting with the third, I believe, that I talked about. The voice from the phone calls was actually used to help, and material used to tie victims, and then, of course, the bodies of the victims. Now, I know what you're thinking. The voice could totally be altered, but if they were able to get it from think about it. You can't really do much with a payphone, or at least not that I'm aware of. But anyway, that's what I'm saying in evidence. Alright. Outcome. So this is quite unsettling. There really isn't one, which is really not fun because it's still unsolved. So, why do I think this case is famous? Well, let's get down why it is famous. The police were completely threatened and taunted by this guy, and he's still out there. So they feel like, you've got to understand how they must feel like being completely unsettled and on edge all the time on this case, because that person's still out there. It's also famous because it's been made into countless books and movies. So if people haven't, known the actual facts of the Zodiac Killer prior to watching a movie or seeing a book made about it, they definitely do now. And I know a lot of crime shows have aired episodes revolving around this case, specifically Criminal Minds comes to mind on this one. And for me, I personally think that this case is unsettling merely on the fact that the psychopath is still roaming the streets. So if it isn't famous because of all the publicity that it's getting, it's definitely famous because of the psychotic behavior this guy got away with doing, and he's still technically able to do it right now if he really wanted to. However, he hasn't really struck again since like 1970s, early 1980s. So that's kind of interesting. So it leads me to believe that maybe this guy either like just wasn't feeling it, or so to speak, anymore, or he died from something and just never was caught, or like he got too much publicity. But that's really hard for me to believe, because he was literally making his own publicity with the notes and the call and claiming responsibility. So I don't know. I guess we'll find out when more evidence or something comes to life. But as for now, thank you so much for tuning in to my podcast this week. I'll be back again next Wednesday with a new episode. Once again, thanks for tuning in. It's with me, Emily, and my forensic podcast, Forensic Case Studies with Emily. See you next week. Well, yeah, you know what I mean. Bye, guys.